Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. You know us. We come to you every Thursday live, and we talk about business. And we've addressed so many things in business, from managing money to managing your employees, leadership, financial, accounting, strategic planning, the new normal and the new year, which happened last year. Some people call it the Great Reset. The pandemic, we've even addressed your health. And tonight, well, tonight we're going to address something that no company can live without. We're going to talk about sales. And man, do we have someone who is a master. He's mastered more than one thing in his life, and I will say that he is a high performer, and it's not just because he comes from the town I grew up in. We've had more than one person from my town, and all appear to be very high performers, very successful. So I'm happy to have my town of Marlboro, New Jersey, being represented once again tonight. Before we introduce our guests, and you know we always have guests, and they are always experts in their respective crafts. So before we introduce him, you have to know my co-host is here in the house. Lori, let them know you're here.
Hello, everyone. Lori Miller, LGC Interior Design. I'm always happy to be here. And I love our guests sharing their expertise because I get to learn from them as well. So tonight's guest is Donnie Scheinwald, and he's going to talk about Salesforce. So if anyone wants to call in with questions, because I know I'm going to have a few, 516-387-1640. And Donnie, thank you so much for being here tonight. And maybe you want to tell everybody a little bit about you, your background, what you do, what sales is, etc.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me, Lori and Ted. I appreciate being here. How far back would you like me to go?
I don't know. When did you first start selling? When did you know you wanted to do sales?
You know, that's interesting. And that's a great question because I didn't. I spent most of my career in operations. And I used to look at salespeople and say, wow, I'm much smarter than them, or at least the perception was that I was smarter than them. And I said I could sell if I got in that role, but taking the leap into sales was very scary. I ultimately did make the leap back in 2008, and I ultimately landed in this position in 2010. So I've been selling for a Fortune 200 company, Lincoln Financial Group, for the last 10 years. And what I sell is I sell 401k plans to mid-market companies, small and mid-market companies, through financial advisors. So in essence, I have two sales that I follow. I have to sell to the financial advisor and then sell to the business owner.
That's interesting. Is it a different type of sales process, or do you think, or they're both the same?
No, they're actually both very different. The first step is my role is to go out and meet with financial advisors. And if you're unfamiliar with what a financial advisor is, they're an individual that is licensed to help you create a timeline for yourself to get to and through retirement financially sound. My role is to go out and meet with those folks, and I'm competing against many others in my field. And at least in the tri-state area, everybody is excellent. But my role is to go out and have that financial advisor use my services versus my competitor. That's the first step. The second step is I have to have the financial advisor have the confidence in me to turn over his business owner client for me to look and review their company's 401k plan. So in essence, first I have to have the advisor want to work with me, and then I have to have the business owner want to use Lincoln Financial's retirement products.
Interesting. So that, I would imagine that, I mean, let's start with, I guess we'll piece it out, right? So we'll start with the financial advisors first. I would imagine that involves a lot of cold calling.
That's a great point. I call it dialing for dollars, but you're 100% right. You know, when I started 10 years ago, there wasn't really any good data as to who and which financial advisors were strong at selling company 401k plans. So I would pick up the phone and I would make sure that I dialed 200 to 300 calls a day. Given there were 15,000 advisors on my list, you can imagine it took a long time to finally get appointments, narrow it down, and finally start seeing individuals to weed out and figure out who was strong in the 401k space and who I actually created a connection with. Now, as I fast forward 10 years, it's much easier because the data sits in a database called Salesforce, and in that database, you know, we're able to uncover who the top financial advisors are. So in essence, not that my role has become easier, but the need to go out and find who is doing the business has become easier.
Very interesting. What are some other ways that you would get your foot in the door? I mean, you know, cold calling, but not everybody wants to cold call.
Well, what I've learned during the pandemic is nobody even wants to pick up the phone anymore. I mean, there are many different ways to basically, no matter what industry you're in, there are many different ways to approach a prospect. You know, there's the standard one, the cold calling, which, again, I did that 10 years ago to establish myself. But frankly, I do a lot less of that. If I make 10 calls a week to prospects, that's a lot. Now, through email, we're able to reach them. Of course, you need to have a very good email because people are being overloaded with emails. And if you send too many out, you know, there's also laws against sending them out and do not deliver and take me off your list. So that's one way. Another way is that no matter what industry you're in, if that business has achieved some sort of award, whether it's, you know, Clean Business of the Year and, you know, Employer of the Year, you know, whatever best place to work, you know, what you can do then is get creative. You can go out. I've gotten custom cookies and I've put their logos on it and the award logo, and I've sent it and said, congratulations on the award. Let's get together. You know, I've sent out logoed gifts. You're allowed to do that up to a certain limit in my industry. I send out logoed gifts. Like, I'll give you another example. I once put together these little tiny footballs and I put them literally, I bought the boxes. I took 200 of them for my top 200 prospects in the area. I put in the little football, and it was around September. So when you think of the quarters, October to December is the fourth quarter. I said, looking forward to a great fourth quarter. And I mailed out these little tiny footballs that had our logo on it. And I had such an amazing reaction.
God.
So it's about getting creative.
That's really brilliant.
Well, there's other ways. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, you can be like everybody else or you can get creative. But you have to know who you're reaching out to. And sometimes that requires research. You know, when I want to meet a top advisor, I'll go out and look at their social pages. I'll look at LinkedIn. I'll look at Facebook. I'll look at Twitter or Instagram. I want to see, do we know any of the same people? Do we, you know, have the same teams that we like? Do we, you know, have the same interest in sports or music or whatever the case may be? Because I want to form a connection with them that when I'm reaching out with them to them, I'm able to quickly create a connection so that they don't either don't hang up the phone on me or I can get an introduction through a common person.
That's pretty brilliant. Now let's talk on the other side, right? Because you have to appeal to them too. And you said it's a very different process.
Yes. So first of all, when you're meeting with any prospect, you know, the first thing you have to understand when you're in sales is it a minor sale or a major sale? And what do I mean by that? You know, when you walk into a Wawa, and I don't know if anyone here is on the West Coast and knows what a Wawa is, but it's a convenience store in New Jersey and surrounding areas. But if you walk into a Wawa type convenience store, those are minor sales. Like you're buying gum, you're buying Gatorade, or you're not. You know, either way, there's not much thought into it. But if you're buying a car, a house, a 401k financial products, and normally that requires more than one sales touch, that's known as a major sale. And major sales need to be treated differently than minor sales, because in a major sales atmosphere, you have to be prepared. So the first thing is, no matter who you're meeting with, understand that you're in a major sales environment. And sometimes when you leave that sale, you may not get the yes. And that's okay as long as the sale is advanced. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But before every meeting, I am fully prepared. And what does that mean? It means that I come with an agenda in hand. I physically have ideas to share. I've done my research. I have general industry issues to discuss with them. But mostly, it's a fact finder that I use when I sit down. But it also shows preparation. It shows that I took the time to care about this meeting enough to put together a formal agenda. So that's the first step in meeting with a prospect. The next step is, when you sit with them, is, you know, yes, ultimately you want to go through that agenda, but you have to understand that it's not your meeting. You're not there for you. You're there for them. And this is a mistake that many sales folks make, is that they believe that they need to speak most of the time of the conversation. I mean, I don't know how many times you've seen it, where maybe somebody comes into your house to sell you windows and they don't stop talking and you leave and you're like, oh, thank God they left my house, right? You know, I always tell this story of one time I was looking for a Ford Explorer for the family about 5 or 6 years ago, and I walk into the Ford dealership, and the first car that was there naturally was a beautiful Mustang. And listen, I love cars, so I was looking at the Mustang, and the salesman walks up. And he's like, oh, you would look great in that car. He's like, it's got a V8 and this amount of horsepower. You want me to get the keys? Give me your license. Up. And he started talking. He didn't ask me why I was there even. He just made the assumption that because I was looking in the window and sitting in the front seat waiting for a salesperson, that I was interested specifically in that Mustang. And that's a problem that a lot of salespeople make, is they don't take the time to understand the situation they're in, the needs of their clients, and where they can provide that unique solution. Because if you don't establish that, you're never getting the sale. It's just something you have to be aware of. So going through the process, when you sit down, there are many different methods. I use something called SPIN, which is a spin selling. It was created by Huthwaite back in the 1970s. It's a method that involved questions to elicit certain answers to have a client come to the decision that they wanted to buy from you. It's very different than forcing a buy. Forcing a buy is, hey, so, you know, here are my windows. What do you think? Let's sign up right now. We got to get you in. Versus, do you think I could solve your problem? Do you think the solution fits? And then having the client tell you back why it fits. That's the ultimate goal of a salesperson when they're sitting in a meeting.
Donnie, can you tell them what SPIN is? An acronym. Can you tell them what it stands
for? Sure. So SPIN, you're right, is an acronym, and it stands for questioning. The first one is situation questioning. The second one is problem. The third one is implication. And the fourth one is needs payoff. If you'd like, I can give you an example of how it works and how it doesn't work, if that's something you're interested in.
No, that's perfect. Go ahead.
Okay.
All right, so let me give you sort of a question and answer of a mistake sales situation. Okay, hi, you know, tell me about yourself. Oh, you know, this is who I am, and I have a family, and I work here. Great. Have you been having a problem with your Xerox machine? Yes, I have. This thing gets stuck. People have to, you know, hand print things. We can't get it fixed. You know, and then someone says, oh, well, I have the perfect solution for you. I got this brand new machine that can take care of everything and never breaks down, and everybody's going to be happy, right? And then you say to yourself, well, why didn't I get that sale? I just solved this person's problem. They have a problem with the machine, and I solved it, yet they're still not going with me. Why is that? Like, what is the problem? And the problem is you've never, or you did not do a good job creating an implication. So let me explain. Let's go back to that same situation. Are you having a problem with your Xerox machine? Yes, I am. What's the problem? Oh, it's, papers are getting stuck. You know, my employees have to do extra work. You know, okay, well, what is that? What does that mean to you? Are you missing any deadlines? Yes, we're missing deadlines. So you're basically telling me that it costs you revenue to the bottom line because your machine is broken. And they say, yes, it's costing me money. So what you've done is you've assigned an implication to that problem. The problem isn't any longer that the machine is broken. The problem is now that they're losing revenue because the machine is broken. So, you know, the next question, the needs payoff is, if I was able to find you a machine that would eliminate any revenue loss, would that be attractive to you? So now your question isn't, I'm going to fix the machine. It's, I'm going to fix your entire revenue based on the fact that they told you that their revenue wasn't fixed. And that's the problem. I don't want to go back to problem using that word, but that's one of the things that salespeople miss during the sales process is, what is the implication of the problem?
Right. What is, how much, you know, some people may say, how much pain is, how much is your pain costing you?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Problem.
It's the same thing with windows, right? I mean, what is the implication of not putting new windows in? You're spending an extra $200 a month in the winter on heating bills. But you have to have them come up with that and them realize that they're saving it. And that's the implication to a problem. How much is this going to cost you? What is the implication of it? And what I do is, and again, this is my industry, but I know in everybody's industry, if they're an expert, they can find different problems with different implications and different needs payoff. So in my industry, I usually pick four problems. And sometimes a client won't have four of the problems. They'll have three of the problems or two of the problems. But the more problems that I can create an implication and solve, the more likely I am to get that sale.
Well,
so it's so interesting because this is the second time I've actually heard that today, because I've been, you know, obviously, you know, pandemic, we always, we stop, we relook at processes, we relook at sales, you know, we look at how we do things. And one of the things, you know, obviously we're looking at is sales. And it's like, how do you address that? Or how do you get new sales? And it's, you know, what problem are they facing? And listen. And that's exactly what you're saying.
And that's exactly right. I mean, just take a look at Amazon over this pandemic. You know, their stock has literally tripled because they knew there was a problem and they solved it. People didn't want to go to stores any longer, and they, you know, they had the solution, but the solution became, you know, more of a solution to the problem that the world faced. You know, look at Uber. Uber could have closed their doors, you know, being that nobody wanted to get in a car with a stranger, not knowing if COVID was on the seats, and Uber went to delivery. I mean, it was a genius move for them to switch. They solved the problem that didn't exist a year ago.
Right.
You know, there is another aspect to sales that nobody talks about, and that's the mental aspect. I know that Ted is aware of this, but I've been in martial arts for 37 years. And, you know, if there's something that martial arts teaches you, especially when you do traditional martial arts, it's mental toughness. And I'm going to tell you that to be good in sales, you have to be mentally tough. Because any salesperson will tell you that day in and day out, they're getting beat up. And when you think of sales and people see your numbers and they say, wow, you know, he sold X amount of millions and he got a presidential award, they think that every day I wake up and the roses and the sun is shining and people are just waiting to sign paperwork to be a new client. It doesn't work that way. For every sale I make, I probably lose two or three statistically. So you have to have that ability. The other thing is you can't take it personally. So, you know, in the beginning, when I first got into sales, I didn't know that. So when someone would tell me I'm not interested, you know, stop reaching out to me, I'm working with somebody else, I would go home and say, what is wrong with me? Like, why won't this person work with me? I'm a good person. I try to help others, and yet this person doesn't like me. It reminds me, and I'm going to age myself, with Seinfeld, where Jerry's girlfriend didn't like him, and he ended up focusing only on her because he was so obsessed why somebody didn't like him. And unfortunately, I fell into that trap early on where I just couldn't understand why some people didn't want to work with me. Again, I learned through time that I can help folks. If they're willing to partner with me, I'm willing to help. I'm willing to help anybody in any aspect of my life, but I'm always willing to help someone that wants to utilize my services. And if they don't want to work with me, the way I look at it now, it's my loss. My manager's manager has a saying, it's so what, now what? Who's next? So in other words, if someone doesn't want to work with you, that's fine. There's plenty of other fish in the sea. And if this person won't work with me, I'm going to go work to the next person. But if you're a salesperson, there are several attributes that I believe you need to have to be successful. So if you're a salesperson and you're not cutting it today, you need to have honest conversations with yourself as to why you aren't getting it done. And I'm going to tell you that I've seen this time and time again. People blame the company. They blame the culture. They blame the product. They blame the industry. And it happens over and over and over again. And look, sometimes they're right. I'm not going to pretend that someone's going to go out and sell an old-fashioned refrigerator versus what they can get today. I mean, some things just aren't good products. But for the most part, there are several attributes that it takes for you to be a successful salesperson. Number one, ask yourself, are you likable? So think of your life. Think of your friend circle, your family circle, your network. Are you a person that people genuinely like? Or are you someone that likes to be by themselves and being around other people, whether it's on the phone or in person, makes you uncomfortable? Are you the type of person that is comfortable being uncomfortable? So, you know, you have to ask yourself, am I likable? That's the first question. The second question is can you form relationships in a very short order? And what do I mean by that? When I meet with a financial advisor or I meet with a business owner, I have 30 minutes to an hour to impress upon that financial advisor or that business that they're going to either want to partner with me or, as a business owner, they're going to want to turn over their company's 401k plan to my company, sometimes in essence of $20, $30 million. And that happens within a one-hour window. Do you have the ability to form strong relationships in a short period of time? The third thing, I tell my kids that if they want to be truly successful, there are really two ways to do it. If you're not going to be, you know, a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or some form of specific industry. And that is either you own your own business or you become a salesperson. Because if those are the only two jobs, I should say, or professions or industries where aside from, being a doctor or a lawyer, where you can actually write your own ticket based on how hard you want to work. I don't know of any unsuccessful business owners that are hard workers, and I don't know any unsuccessful salespeople that are hard workers. Again, a lot of people think sales are 9 to 5. You know, when I'm done seeing people at 5 o'clock, I come home, I sit with my family, I have dinner, but by 7 o'clock, I'm back at it, and I'm working till 10, 11 o'clock every night. And most will say, well, you don't need to do that anymore. And maybe they're right, maybe they're not. I don't want to find out. I want to know that I'm not leaving anything up to chance. I'm putting everything out there, doing the best I can to achieve the best results that I possibly could.
It's very good. Donnie, I want to give people, if anyone has questions for you, they'd like to engage you, whether it's an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or someone who knows that sales is important and not sure how to make it happen. And I want to reiterate, you're number one in Lincoln Financial, and you've done that for 8 years. So you are what the business world would call a high performer. You're number one, and you're number one by a long shot. We didn't even talk about that. But just if someone wants to call and have a conversation with Donnie, the phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. Go ahead, Donnie.
Okay, thank you. The next thing that I thought I should touch on is the follow-through. And you'll notice that most people talk about follow-ups, right? Oh, I'm going to follow up with this person. I presented last week. I haven't heard anything. Let me follow up with them. Following up, to me, is not a strong enough term. And it's not a strong enough term because what you're basically going to do is you're going to reach out to that person and you're going to say to them, hey, what do you think? You ready to move forward? And if they don't answer you, if they say no, you've left it all to chance. So the first thing is that when you're in a meeting, you have to make sure that there are next steps. And I think I mentioned this early on, that in a major sale, next steps may not be the hey, let's do it. Let's go ahead. Let's sign paperwork. You know, many times it is, especially when I was in person, it was much easier to get that paperwork. But I will tell you that especially via Zoom and WebEx, that is not as easy as it used to be. So the thing is that you have to have next steps that are pretty much agreed to by both parties. So what are next steps? Who is going to do the next step and by what time frame? So, for example, you know, we're going to review your website. Okay, that's great. Review my website. I'm going to reach out to you Tuesday with any final questions and or concerns, and then we can move forward if you're comfortable. Is that okay? And, you know, generally they say yes. And the key is that you need to put out there what the next steps are. Don't leave it to chance. You know, I've done it to salespeople myself. Again, going back to the window person, they do the pitch, and then they say, you want to do it today? And if you do it today, I can get you this deal, that deal. And you say, no, I'll be in touch. You know, let me talk it over with my wife. And they say, okay, I'll give you a call, and they leave. And I say to myself, well, why didn't they establish when they're going to call me, what they're going to talk about, and what final steps do I need to move forward? They're just leaving it up to chance. And odds are that that person is not going to get my sale.
Right.
Does that make sense? Well, let me ask you this.
For sure. It's a great outline for. You spoke about spin selling, and there's a system to that. So what I hear you saying is that selling is not just going out, making friends, shaking hands, like, you know, a politician, kiss babies and shake hands. and get people to like you. There's a system for this, and that starts with preparation, and possibly even prospecting, because you spoke of research, right? So, sounds like part of your system includes research, so that when you plug that company into your system, there's a certain amount of intelligence you already have about them, which helps you understand the kinds of questions you're going to ask as you are moving them through your sales process or funnel. Is that an accurate way to put it?
It is. It's in every industry, you're going to have top prospects. And it's very important that you approach your top prospects different than your bottom prospects. You know, if I took the, you know, call it now 10,000 financial advisors in New Jersey, and I did research on all of them, I'd spend all my time just doing research. So what I do is I take the information, the data I have, and I put each group into a separate bucket. You know, there's a bucket of folks that have a low propensity to do business with me, and I may touch upon them in a very I don't want to say unfriendly, but non-specific way. And then I have the next tier, people that have a decent amount of business, and, you know, hopefully I could take them to the next level, and I'll approach in a certain way. And then I have the top folks, and those top folks can move the needle, because what you find out when you're in sales is that 20% of your top clients do 80% of your business. So think about that. Right. 20% do 80% of your business. You can bet that when you're working and partnering with your top clients / prospects, that you have to be as present for them as you possibly can be. If they have a need that needs addressing, if they have an issue, or they need an idea that you can share, by all means, you have to be at the forefront. Because what statistics show is that for folks to want to work with you, you have to show them a problem that you can solve or an idea that they haven't thought of themselves. Because otherwise, why are you different than anybody else?
Correct. So there's your competitive advantage is your ability. Well, one of them is your ability to distinguish yourself in the crowd, in the cacophony of voices between internet and people flooding everyone with emails.
Absolutely. We live in what I call a sea of sameness. You know, it's funny because when I send an email out, there is a website called www.subjectline.com. And if you enter in the subject line that you want to use, it'll rate it on a score of 1 to 100. And I generally, I mean, almost always, don't send out emails until I get it to an 85 or a 90, because you want to make it so that when that prospect sees that email and that line, that they open up that email. Because you'd be surprised, or maybe not as surprised, how many emails aren't even opened because the subject line is completely unappealing to that specific prospect. So subjectline.com.
Great source. Great resource. Yeah, thanks for that.
And it's free, by the way, so you don't have to sign up. I mean, you know, if you want to use it often, you could sign up, but you can use it free at first. And then, you know, of course, like everyone else, they want to gather your information if you use it often. But
right.
It's been a great resource. I just sent an email out last night to about 60 advisors, and I got literally about 20% response today. And I was very happy.
Wow.
And interestingly enough, the score was 100 out of 100. And I've never had 100 out of 100 on that subject line. So I was like, oh, this is interesting that I got 100 out of 100. And I sent it out, and I got back a 20% score. I mean, 20% return on my email. So I was very,
wow.
very happy today. Today was a good day.
That is impressive. Yeah, that's
yeah.
very impressive.
Can you share that again for anyone who kind of missed that? It's subjectline.com?
Yes, yeah, subjectline.com, and you enter in the subject line that you want to use. What you'll find is that it doesn't like big words. It doesn't like long subject line. It likes short, concise, imperative type lines. Like, for example, you know, earn additional revenue today, and then just leave it at that. You know, somebody will open it up to see, well, how am I going to earn additional revenue today? And all you wanted to do is open up that email to see what you have inside. Of course, when you put that email together, it has to be attractive as well. Can't tell someone to earn revenue today and then they open it up and you know, hey, buy this. You know, it has to be something where you're drawing
right.
them
right.
to you. And, you know, that's what, you know, your goal is for them to read that opening email subject line, open up the email, and in a matter of a few seconds, say to themselves, okay, I could do that. That's how you pick up prospects.
Very good.
That's really awesome.
And Donnie, you also spoke about mental attitude of a salesperson, and you related it to your training in martial arts. Can you how far did you go in martial arts? Is that something you just did for a few months as a hobby, or I mean, and yeah, I know you did talk about it, but how do you think that impacted your mind? Do you think it was a matter of mental toughness?
A great question. So first off, a little background on my martial arts. 1984, I moved around the corner, not knowing to where Ted lived. I went to Marlboro High School, and I had moved from Brooklyn. And this is probably a funny story. So I was 4'6". And if anyone on this call has kids or you've been you remember how tall you were when you were a kid, 4'6" is normally like second grade. I was 4'6" in high school. So first day of high school in a new school, back before bullying was looked down upon, I was actually beat up several times the first day and, believe it or not, stuffed into an actual locker. So they put me in the locker, and I was banging and screaming until the coach let me out.
Are you kidding? They
That's
put
a true
you in
story.
A locker?
That's a true story. Yes, I was stuffed into a locker. I fit, and it's funny because my kids went to the same high school, and they wrestled. So when I went to the school to look at the lockers, they had replaced them. I couldn't fit into them, you know, even then. They made them smaller. But back in the old days, for those that remember the 70s and 80s, the lockers were quite large. So I got
long,
stuffed in a locker.
Right.
Yep, they were long. That's right. I know you
right.
were in the same high school. So I came home that day, September 10, 84, and the Karate Kid movie had just come out, the original one, with Pat Morita and Ralph Macchio. And that evening, I signed up for karate, never looked back. I began teaching in 95, and in 01, April of 01, I opened up my karate school. And I trained under what I consider a martial arts legend who unfortunately passed this December. But what he taught us was something that will carry with me forever. So basically, he used to tell us that no matter what we faced in our lives, it was never going to be as hard as the training that we faced in the dojo. Whether it was getting beat up by your peers or adults, or it was going through the type of movements that made you push yourself to, you know, tremendous heights that you didn't think you could achieve. He taught us mental toughness. And basically that mental toughness carried with me. And again, not knowing it, I was always sort of at the top of my, you know, industry, whether it was operations or, you know, whatever it is I did, I was always as high as I could be. But when I went into the sales aspect of it, I didn't know how important having a strong mental attitude and fortitude to have. I talked early on about how I was upset that people wouldn't want to work with me, and I eventually overcame that. But there are so many other mental factors that go into sales. And if you're in sales, you'll appreciate a lot of what I'm about to tell you. So number one, you're going to lose more deals than you actually win. And it's important to come to terms with that because, and look, take a look at your favorite baseball player. I don't care who it is, you know, or how long ago you go back. A good batting average is a 350. That means they hit once out of every three times they're at bat, and they're considered Hall of Famers. So if you can close one out of every three deals, you're a Hall of Famer right there. So if you think of it that way, what is the key to being successful? Get as many deals as the pipeline, because the more deals you have, if you close a third of them, the more sales you're going to have. It's a numbers game. So the first mental hurdle is understanding that you're going to lose as many deals as you make. The second hurdle is understanding that people are going to shut the door on you, but when they lock you out the front door, you have to get in through the window. Right. So if they shut the door on you and you can't get in, and this has happened to me over the years where I break people down. I mean, I've been in my role now. I'm in my 11th year at this wonderful company. But I will tell you that people that wouldn't open the door for me in 2013 and 14 are now working with me because eventually I broke down the barriers. And they always say, I can't believe I didn't work with you sooner. And I say, I can't believe you didn't work with me sooner either. But the key is that you have to keep pushing forward. And look, like everybody else, I'm human. There are times when I fall back and I have a pity party. A pity party is where I say, oh, the world is against me. Nothing is going right. And again, maybe the product isn't what it should be. And you start to fall into a mental trap. And in your own mind, you become weak. You have to have that mental toughness to overcome that internal mental weakness. That sound in your brain has to be tuned to something positive. There is a motivational speaker that I follow called Dr. Kevin Elko, E-L-K-O. Dr. Kevin Elko has coached University of Alabama, Eagles, the Cowboys. I mean, I can go on and on. The list is Ohio State, Rutgers, Coach Shiano, which is where my kids go to Rutgers or went. And he just firmly believes in constantly moving forward. And here's the next thing, taking accountability. You have to take accountability for the actions and control the controllables. What does that mean? It means that there are things that are outside your control. I've driven hours to meetings where the owner was sick, didn't show up, and forgot to call. Imagine you get a hotel room, you stay overnight, you go in the next morning. Oh, the owner, oh no, he didn't come in today, and you want to kill somebody. But there are things you can't control. It happens. It happens a lot. It happens more than you think. Control the controllables and control your attitude. Because ultimately your attitude will drive the direction of where you're going. Right? So and you know, this I saw something interesting as well the other day. You know, because there are times I get off calls where I either lose deals or the call didn't go well. And I say to myself, you know, if I had a box of marbles, right, and there were like 1,000 marbles in that box and one of them was broken and I took it out, would I throw the entire box of marbles away? No. I would throw that one out and I would appreciate the rest of them. And the same thing applies to your day. You have only so many seconds and minutes in your day. If you have a bad minute, a bad few minutes, put that to the side. You have the rest of the day to make up for that. So don't throw away. Don't let that negativity affect the rest of the day. Put it off to the side and stay focused on your goals.
Hey Donnie, I have a somewhat funny sales story that relates to what you're saying and mental toughness. So like you, I cold called, And one day I called, and, you know, I'm speaking to a woman, and I'm telling her about my service. And she just hung up on me, and I'm going to assume you've had that experience before. She hangs up. So what did I do? I called her back, and I said, hey, I don't know what happened. We must have gotten disconnected, these phone lines. Anyway, so I could hear her kind of chuckle, and it was one of those, like, this guy must be crazy. So she actually listened to me, scheduled a meeting, and became a client.
So. Yeah, that's the thing, is you learned that, you know, about mental toughness. You learned about staying the course. And, you know, I'll tell you another relative story. I was going to buy I was trying to buy a nice car for myself a few years back, and I went to all the nice dealerships, and it was, you know, and every salesperson I met was, again, them. I went to one of the dealerships, and the gentleman sat down. He was a young guy. He was probably 27 years old, well put together, and he sat down with me, and he started asking about my family and why I wanted to drive the car, and, you know, all these, what football team I like. I was sitting with him for an hour, and I finally said to him, you're going to try to sell me a car? And I actually bought my car from that gentleman because he took the time to care about me and who I was.
Right.
And he even
right.
remembered at one point that the Cowboys were playing the Packers, and he was a Packer fan, I was a Cowboy fan, and he even texted me well after I bought the car. And he said, hey, I'm thinking about you during this game. And I was like, man, that guy's – I'm going to buy every car off that person. And, you know, that's the kind
cool.
of thing where you – you know, another attribute is do you think of others before yourself? Think about yourself. You know, you may have a family. You may have friends, and you're the kind of person that does things for them. You know, a good salesperson is very, very, very unselfish, because they understand that the needs of their clients come before their own. So another strong attribute to have.
Absolutely.
Did I stump you?
No. Not at all. Not at
Put
all.
Put it out.
So I'm thinking about what you just described, right? So if I made an assumption, you talked about listening. So that guy who sold you the car, if we took the 80-20 rule, would you say he spoke 20% of the time and listened to 80%?
You know, I would have to say it was probably a 90-10. You know, when he – because,
wow.
you know, the other thing is when you ask a question – there's different types of questions. So going back to
right.
spin, when you start with spin, those are situation questions. They could be yes, no. Hey, are you from New Jersey? Yes. Did you go to college? Yes. Where'd you go? You know, those are simple one-answer questions, and you're not really
right.
eliciting much. And statistics show that offering too many situation questions actually is a negative thing to do. So you don't want to linger on a situation. That's why it's important to know who the person is before they even sit down in your seat. Now, granted, this dealership person didn't even know me before I walked in. By the luck of the draw, he got me. But understand that situation questions are not important. It's as important as problem questions, because problem questions are, well, you know, tell me how, you know, I'm going back to Xerox, but tell me how your Xerox machine is working. Oh, it's working fine. Really? It never breaks down? Oh, it does break down. Oh, tell me about that. You know, now you're getting that person talking, and you're getting them to open up, and that's where you start discovering your mind should be working now, thinking about where do I want to take this conversation? Because ultimately, you want to lead that sale to your solution, right? So let's say your solution is the paper for Xerox, right? Well, if that machine breaks down, you know, you have to say to them, well, do you think maybe it's the cheap paper you're using? Right? So you shift that conversation to what you're selling, but you're doing it through a question. Does it, you know what I mean? So that you're leading them to your result.
So, and I just wonder if sometimes that can be a problem for people, because you're ultimately talking about asking the right question. So, and maybe you've answered this already, but how do people know how to ask the right questions or what the right questions are?
Again, that's a great question, and I'll tell you what I did. So when I learned spin, and I actually learned it by reading the book, and I got off Amazon. It was used, $13. I got the disc set, three disc set, and I listened to it over and over again in my car until it sunk in. I mean, it, you know, the second disc is where it takes off. I think it's the 20th minute, and I listened to it over and over and over again. And then what I did is I went home and I charted out, and I put a graph, and I did SPIN, and I started with the solution first. Let's say my solution was cost savings. I would start with the situation question: what does this cost you, right? What are some of the, you know, things that cost more? You know, what's the implication of that cost? Ultimately, leading them down to the solution that I offer with respect to cost. If the respect, you know, whatever it is you're selling, you have to lead them down to that path. So my advice for you is that once you learn spin, create that grid that you're able to know the questions in advance that are going to lead to your specific solution. So for example, if I didn't have an electric car, I wouldn't ask, and I was a dealership, I wouldn't ask them, hey, how much better would it be if you were an electric car? And if they said yes, I'd be like, uh-oh, what did I just do? I just sold them something I don't have, right? So you want to make sure that your questions lead them to the solutions that you're offering. And that can work in any industry.
Very good.
You know, I want to mention one last thing about the mental aspect. And that's, when I look at sales, I look at it as a learning process. You know, people use the word master. And, you know, I read somewhere that a master is 10,000 hours of doing the same thing over and over again. And, you know, when I think about martial arts, I've probably done 30,000 hours, right? But I still don't consider myself a master, because every time I put my uniform or gi on, I'm learning, right? And my instructor, when he would come in, he would, no matter what, he would find something wrong with what I was doing, to the point where my wife would say, why do you put yourself in that position? You're really good at martial arts, yet, you know, he's constantly criticizing. I said, no, he's not criticizing me. He's teaching me, and I'm learning. I'm learning to be the best version of myself. So when you're doing sales, understand that you either win or you learn, right? You don't fail. I always talk about failure as getting knocked down and not willing to get back up. That's when you fail. Getting knocked off your horse, losing a game. I mean, look at Tampa Bay. They won the Super Bowl this year, and I believe, and I don't quote me on this, but I think they probably lost the first five or out of six games, or first four out of six games. It was some large number, and I thought to myself, wow, I wonder if their season's over. Probably not with Tom Brady. And ultimately, he came back and I think won his last eight games or whatever the case was. The point is you don't fail till you give up. Learn from the experience. Right. What could you have done different? The person buying from you that didn't buy from you, it's not their fault that you didn't do a good enough job of presenting your solution to them. It's not their fault. And yes, there's extenuating circumstances. I just found out right before this call that I lost the sale because right before we spoke to them, they made the decision to go somewhere else. There was nothing I could do about that. The only thing I'm mad about is I didn't get to them a week earlier. That's the only thing I could be mad about. And again, I'm going to learn from that experience and know that, you know, I shouldn't have sat on it for a few days longer than I did. And that's where I learned. So make sure that every sale you use, ask yourself the honest question, why did I lose that sale? There's a reason for it. And don't always put your blame on the buyer. The buyer is responding to your salesmanship, not the other way around.
Correct. So, and you know, I want to make a comment about spin selling. So, there's the book where they lay out how they did the research and the thousands of high-performing salespeople they looked at and what the common threads they had when they worked out spin. And then there's the workbook. So which one are you suggesting to people?
I've done them all. So look, I'm going to tell you this.
Okay.
I was a math major in school. I was what's called an actuary when I came out of Hofstra. Lori and I shared Hofstra, but I was an actuary, so I studied math. Reading was not my specialty. So when I read the book, I could tell you I probably fell asleep a few times reading it because, you know, it was interesting, but then there were boring parts, and I'm not a reader. If you're a reader, by all means, read the book. One of my colleagues read the book, and he loved it. I enjoyed the disc because I was had a lot of windshield time, and I was able to put the disc on, and I was able to rewind my CD, which I don't even know if cars have CD players anymore, but I was able to rewind the CD and go to the specific parts I wanted to re-listen to over and over and over again. So for me, that's how it sunk in. The workbook did come later. So there are, you know, there's a ton of stuff around spin you could find on Amazon, but you have to start with the disc and the book. Those are the beginning. Those are the basics.
Okay.
Those, are, you know, create the foundation for everything else.
Okay, perfect. Good, good. All right.
So
I can't tell you how you, I mean, look, Ted and I started this because I'm not a business person, and I always find our guests fascinating, and I'm always learning, right? So like you, I'm a boxer. So it's never, you know, you're always pushing and you don't give up, and you have that mental acuity where, you know, you're always learning and looking and following and trying to push yourself further. But this has been so hugely helpful because sales is a huge part of owning a business. I mean, you have to make sales in order to stay in business. So,
well, yeah, and
service,
Lori, that's a great point. And I'm going to tell everybody on this call that you're in sales. And I say that to every single person listening today, because I, no matter whether you're an accountant and you have to sell your clients on the numbers you put on that page, or you're a lawyer and you have to sell the judge on your specific side, you are in sales. And no one ever told me that when I was, you know, young and up and coming, because I wasn't physically in sales. So nobody ever taught me that, you know, you're constantly selling. You're selling your teachers when you're in school. You're selling your parents when you're a kid. You're selling your spouse every single day. You're in sales.
Right.
And believe me, especially with your spouse, you're going to fail. But you got to get back on that horse. And remember, failure only counts when you give up.
Yep, that's so true.
Well,
so how can people reach you?
Well, I mean, when we put out the blog, I guess I could put my phone number on here if somebody would like to speak. Is that a good way to do it? I mean, what's the norm? Email,
phone number, email, whatever you're comfortable with. Everyone's different.
Yep. I mean, the best way to reach me is via text, because if I don't know your number, I'm probably not going to answer it, given the fact that I'm on the phone all day long. But my number is 732-682-1840. And my email address is LAIN as in Nancy, DON as in Nancy, 1, like the number 1, at yahoo.com. LaneDon1 at yahoo.com.
Awesome. And I will put that out in an email as well. I believe we have your information. Now, do you do business coaching or like any sort of sales coaching type?
Well, you know, given the fact that my job is all intensive and they're a great company to work for and they've been nothing but fantastic to me, I actually couldn't do that. It's considered outside business activities in my industry. But I am willing to help anyone that you know, has any questions. I'm absolutely willing to answer them or guide them to the right people that can actually help them. And like I mentioned earlier, Dr. Kevin Elko does what's called a Monday morning cup of inspiration. It's free. You sign up, and every Monday morning, there's about 4 to 5 minutes of him, you know, getting you ready for the day.
And, of course, if we have any financial planners or business owners that are looking for, you know, policies, right?
Well, yes.
That would be you.
Absolutely. If you have any business owner clients and you're looking to have their 401ks reviewed, I can absolutely guide you to, you know, if it's myself in New Jersey or I have counterparts that do the same thing I do around the country.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Ted, I'm sure you have more questions.
No. Well, I was just going to say 401ks are the only thing that you work with business owners on, Donnie.
Yeah, I mean, my company actually does annuities, 401ks, life insurance, long-term care. So the company does everything. I specifically specialize in working with small businesses to create retirement programs. It doesn't need to be a 401k plan. There are other types of retirement programs that can help the business owner get more money in their pocket, avoid paying taxes. There are legal ways to put money into a retirement program to avoid large amounts of taxes. And for your employees, there's a good way to save for retirement. I will tell you that I learned this statistic that my company pays out in annuities every year the same amount as Social Security. So think about that.
Wow.
It's a privatized Social Security,
wow,
in essence. And that helps individuals to have a check for the rest of their lives. Because the biggest, mm-hmm, fear that people have is they're going to outlive their money. And when you have an annuity, you can actually create a lifetime income, like Social Security.
Very good.
Very cool. Useful. Very useful information.
Absolutely. And I can guide anybody that needs help to the right people as well.
Awesome.
And so, Donnie, yeah, last words of wisdom. We have about 60 seconds or less to do that. Last words of sales.
Let me say this to you. If you're thinking about getting into sales, if you're in sales today, look in the mirror and say, do I have what it takes? All right. I doubted myself. I'm just letting you know I doubted myself until I got in the role and realized that I had what it takes. So make, mm-hmm, sure that you hold yourself accountable. You work as hard as you can, and you learn from every experience. All right, don't give up. I've had bad years. I've had good years. Sales are not linear. Thank you, Lori, and thank you, Ted. I appreciate you having me on this call.
Thank you so much.
It's our pleasure. Thank you. And as everyone else has done, you've done a great job representing Marlboro, New Jersey. I know you're representing your company and yourself. But yes, Marlboro strikes again. So thanks, Donnie.
Thank you, Marlboro, New Jersey, for keeping our podcast up and running. This is great. Very great.
Hey,
so
everyone,
you
have a great evening, yes, Donnie. Yep. And, keep, and maybe one day we'll have you back to talk about martial arts. So
yes, sounds great. Thank you.
All right.
All right,
thanks a lot.
You.
Everyone,
right,
have
bye-bye.
A great evening.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.